The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had been looking at the occurrence of earthworms, at some of their characteristics. And again, I remind you that every time I mention a particular characteristic or structure, this is really a problem for the evolutionist. It is not a problem for those of us who believe that God simply created these organisms with their functions and their varied and individual niches in nature, but to try and make them fit a process of randomness and chaos over millions and billions of years simply doesn't make good sense. I mentioned toward the last of the program that earthworms really do not have eyes. Interestingly, they have a great many lens-shaped photoreceptors in the epidermis. They are negatively phototactic. I think there's a better word for that, but we'll leave it at that. That is, they generally do not spend a lot of time in light, if it's bright at all. If it's dim light, they will put up with that. They also have some single-celled sense organs that are very widely distributed in the epidermis, and these apparently are for light and or chemoreceptors, so that they can detect changes in pH. Apparently, to some degree, the amount of light. There are lots of these that are found in the prostomium, which is going to be that little fleshy knob that is found on the anterior portion of the worm's body that gives it information about the soil it's passing through. And if there is soil that is not favorable, acid, high pH, or low pH, or whatever, then the earthworm probably is going to, these are the nerve receptors that are going to allow it to avoid those things that would be detrimental to them. Earthworms, of course, don't have any defense. And yet, their numbers indicate that they certainly are successful. I have really forgotten the figures. I've forgotten the number of earthworms that are at least theorized to be present in an acre of soil. But it's a big number, oodles of them that are present there. They are considered delicacies by organisms, birds in particular, certainly take care of a good number of earthworms. I can remember when I was in high school in Colorado, we would often, if we were going on a fishing expedition, the night before we would go up to 3rd Avenue, the boulevard that was there, that often in the summertime at least would be watered at night by sprays that would be there. And we'd go out with our flashlights, and there would be dozens of earthworms that were night crawlers. Large ones get up to be 10, 12 inches long. Well, 12 maybe a little long. 8 inches, 10 inches long. And they're simply stretched out there on the lawn under the water coming from the sprays. And it was part of the game was to sneak up on them. The worms are very sensitive to vibrations, and if you come striding up to them, they're going to pull themselves back down in the hole rather quickly. But if you move stealthily, or if you could walk along the pavement and reach over onto the lawn to where they were, then it didn't take long for you to fill up a container with worms and have certainly as many as you're going to need for a fishing expedition the next day. There has been some discussion about whether the worms are intelligent or not. Darwin was of the opinion that they displayed intelligence by being able to grab the small end of a leaf and pull it into their hole. Subsequent studies have indicated that the worms really, it is a matter of trial and error, and they simply try until they can get the small end, which of course is easier to get pulled down into their hole than the wide end is. But it's really not any evidence of intelligence. They apparently can be conditioned to avoid electric shock. And I would look on this really as conditioning rather than evidence of intelligence. Any organism, God created in that organism the abilities that are necessary for its survival. And these things are what are often looked on by the evolutionists as intelligence. It is not intelligent, in my opinion, it is not intelligence in the sense of the reasoning processes that humans are capable of. We got into a rather interesting squabble in one of the classes recently about whether apes have intelligence or not. I won't get into this here. At some point in the future, when we get to that level of organisms, we may pursue it. But most organisms, including protozoans, are capable of conditioning, and they will avoid certain things that are inimical to their well-being. And I would look on that simply as a matter of instinct, or that collective ability which God provided for each creature when he created it. I don't look on that really as evidence of intelligence. Evolutionists, again, often will put the term they will use to account for these kinds of behavior is instinct. And the difficulty, of course, they'll talk about, I've read articles that were discussing the evolution of instinct. Now, the difficulty with that, of course, is that many of these instincts are necessary to the survival of the organism. And where those are the case, you really can't argue about evolution of these things. If the organisms have them, fine. But they're not going to get them by trial and error. If they don't have them, the organism ceases to exist. And collectively, the group ceases to exist. So that, the fuss about that, I think we'll leave at the moment. Now, the method of reproduction in earthworms is very interesting. These organisms are monoecious. We talked about the polychaetes that were dioecious, which means that there is a sex in separate organisms. There are male and female worms. But in the earthworm, each worm will contain both male and female reproductive systems, functional reproductive systems. Now, self-fertilization is not possible for the earthworm. And it is a bisexual reproduction, but the male organs of one worm are going to be providing sperm for the other and vice versa. And the worms, of course, will simply move together and place the anterior portions of their bodies in such a way that the appropriate sexual openings in the worm's bodies are placed together, and during the process they will be stuck together with mucus that simply holds the bodies in the correct position. There is on each of the worms one of the, again, if you want unique structures, the clitellum would be such a unique structure. It is a band that is probably the most obvious structure, exterior structure on the earthworm. And during the process of sexual reproduction, these things will be placed in such a way that the sperm of one worm will move into the female reproductive portion of the other worm. And as soon as that process is concluded, then the clitella will slip over the head of the worm, and fertilization will actually take place in a structure that is known as a cocoon that forms from the clitellum, so that bisexual reproduction occurs, and these little cocoons are going to be left behind by the earthworm in the soil, and they will remain there while embryogenesis, the development of the fertilized egg into the larvae and eventually into the young worm, takes place. And then when growth has occurred, development has occurred to the point that the worm is capable of fending for itself, they will simply crawl out of the ends of the cocoon and become functional worms on their own at that point. The earthworm then, of course, is going to grow a new clitellum so that it would be ready for the next reproduction when it occurs. We have talked about the setae, the little chitinous bristles. The primary purpose of these things is simply to allow the earthworm to hold its body in a position in the soil. The earthworm, actually, the movement of an earthworm is the same as peristalsis in humans. Peristalsis is the alternate extension and contraction of certain layers of muscles in the intestinal tract that will alternately squeeze down flat, and then the circular muscles will contract and push the material along through the intestinal tract. In earthworms, that's the way the body moves, and in order for that to happen, the setae are going to have to hold a section of the body in place while another section is going to extend itself. And then the extended portion will have to be in place while the rest of the body behind that is pulled along as the earthworm moves. And the resistance to being moved is fairly large. Probably any robin would be glad to testify to that. That collectively, these setae, the 8 pair per body segment, can offer a great deal of resistance to a worm being pulled from the hole. There are occasions where that resistance is sufficient that the worm actually is pulled in two, and the bird gets a half a worm. Usually they're patient and simply sit there waiting while the body, the muscles fatigue, and eventually the entire worm comes out. But that is a part of the function, at least, for the setae themselves. And again, all the things that we have talked about here are evidence of teleology, or purposiveness, in the earthworm. Which means, again, that if you're trying to have these structures appear from organisms that didn't have them, there is the evolutionary problem of providing some way for them to be created in order that they can finally attain a purposeful and necessary function in the worm. Necessary in the sense that if they don't have them, the worm is not going to be successful. It's either going to die quickly, or by virtue of behavior, it will not be able to succeed very long. And it simply is evidence, again, of the fact of a very interesting organism that God chose to create for a purpose, and it fulfills that purpose. Without it, among other things, we would not have plants, and in many cases. So these things are simply testimony to the wisdom of the Creator and not to some kind of mysterious evolutionary process that has produced them over millions and billions of years.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.